Human Vortex Training and Menachem Brody present the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast, where we talk strength training, physiology, psychology, tech, and much more to help you get fitter, faster, and stronger in and out of your sport, giving you expert insights, talking with other leading experts. And now, your host, world-leading strength coach for cyclists and triathletes, Menachem Brody.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's episode number 88 of the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast. This week is Lynn Swann's number, Hall of Fame Pittsburgh Steeler American football player, and somebody who was an inspiration to many, many players back in the 70s and 80s. Just an incredible talent, and somebody who embodies trying other somewhat related things, sports and arts, to help improve his performance. Lynn was an early adopter, and he looked to ballet to help him to be able to improve his abilities, and it paid off in spades. He made it to the Hall of Fame, and one of his very well-known catches, or perhaps the most well-known, was in the Super Bowl, over through the back of the end zone, where he leapt up, and it was very ballet-like. And this is one of the things that are really important, and it's not the topic of today's podcast. Today we're going to talk about all-outs and why you are not getting what you need out of your all-outs. And I just wanted to mention an upcoming episode which we have, which we'll talk about the importance of doing other sports that are not similar in the challenges to the body or the energy systems, because this is a large part of long-term athletic development. And because many of us get into cycling and triathlon and running as adults after these other sports, or having never done these other sports, it is a challenge for many of us to get over that mental hurdle. And in fact, unfortunately, adults ruin everything. We now have specialization with kids at a very young age, which I am very against. But again, we will save that for another podcast here. But today, episode 88 is about all outs, why you are not getting what you need out of your all outs. Now, this is a topic that has fascinated me, to be honest, over the last 4 or 5 years. I've had a number of riders and triathletes come to me after reading the 80-20 book, or a number of other approaches, you know, Tabata and this and that. And there are a number of confounding factors that really tie in and are really seen as themes throughout the cycling and triathlon world. And that's what we're going to cover today. So we're not going to do an in-depth into the exact energy systems and the time. We're going to cover it from, let's say, a 2 mile away view, so we can really see everything. And as you've gathered here through the podcast, when we revisit a subject, we go a little bit deeper, and then we revisit it, or we have a guest, we go even deeper. That's kind of how I'd like to structure the podcast, as opposed to having 3, 4, 5 hour marathons, where, yeah, that would be fun to talk to a microphone or to have a guest for that long. But let's face it, most of you are going to be busy. You'll forget what came earlier, where it's much easier to go back and listen to a previous episode. Now, before we dive in, real quick, the Big Gear Blueprint is going extremely well. We've had some fantastic live question and answer sessions so far. We have athletes, Tenerife, England, Pittsburgh, South Central U.S. I can't exactly remember where she is, as well as the Pacific Coast outside of Portland, Oregon. So we have people from all around the world. If you would like to join and you're interested, this is a personalized either strength training or strength training plus on bike program with weekly live question and answer sessions with me and others in the group. It is a fantastic learning time. Tons of lessons are being learned, and it's going far better than the two betas and I actually imagined. It just gets better every time we do it. And if you are interested in unlocking your full potential for this coming year, it's not too late. It's never too late, especially when you've got someone at the helm who has been doing this for some time and understands which knobs and dials to turn and switches. So if you're interested, email me, B as in boy, R-O-D as in dog, I-E at humanvortextraining.com. And we will set up a short 10-minute phone call just to see if it is in fact a good fit for you, and then roll from there. Now let's get into today's episode about all-out efforts. Now, I recognize that all-out efforts, that covers a wide variety of time frames, so it could be anywhere from 5 seconds or 3 seconds all the way up to 2 minutes. We're lumping them all together. And yes, I know, as an exercise physiologist, that's a little bit of a sin because we need to differentiate because each energy system has different needs, and we really should talk about them individually. Yet, the common mistakes that are keeping you from getting the results that you deserve or are looking for are fairly common across all of them. So again, 2 mile view, 2 miles away so we can see everything. Let's get into the mistakes that we make. Now, at the beginning, one of the first things that we have to talk about here is the neuromuscular system's ability to contract and create proximal stiffness to get distal motion. And this ties into the main theme here, the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete podcast, Strong and Savvy. Many of us as cyclists and triathletes have begun doing some strength training, or you, the listeners, have hopefully been doing it for quite some time, and you recognize that there is a large value for a well-developed strength training program that is year-round, that also has on-bike programming that is going to complement what you are doing in the weight room. Not doing the exact same thing. Certainly, I mean, it depends. There are times where we will do the same thing as we're doing in the weight room, same energy system, same type of work to rest ratios on the bike. However, those are tend to be very few and far between because here at HVT and part of the Vortex method, as described in the second edition, revised edition of the book, which will be released here soon, we have the conjugate method, which means we're working on multiple things. We don't go through this strength endurance and then power phase. I really don't like that for cyclists for two reasons. Number one is because you're losing fitness in the other areas when you just put all the marbles into one basket for that. And really, number two, the conjugate method just produces far better athletes, more injury resiliency, allows you to balance things out and get far more done as opposed to putting blinders on and just going after one thing. Again, it depends. But really, when it comes to the on bike all outs, the number one mistake that everyone is making, or those of you who aren't seeing the results, is that you're not doing your strength training year round. You're stopping after the base, or you're not focused on what you actually need to get out of your strength training. You're focused on more weight on the bar, more reps. I've written almost ad nauseum about this at this point on the blog. I've talked about this previously on the podcast. But the short take home is that the strength training needs to be dialed in to teach you how to get proximal stiffness for distal motion. And that means how you do an exercise matters. That was the piece here in March of 2021. 2020 is over. Woohoo! That talks about intent matters. This is why just going through repetitions isn't enough. There are days, I'm very guilty of this, especially having a newborn. There are some days where I just put the work in. I knew the quality wasn't going to be really high. The technique was going to be good, but I wasn't going to have the focus and intent in order to drive my numbers where I normally would for performance. And that's okay. There's a reason and a season in life, and that's where we were. Now, once we, and we're not going to dive too much into the strength because I really want to focus a little bit more on the practical side. Now, it's not that the strength isn't practical, but there's far more into it than just, you know, focus on intent, the ordering of your exercises matter, the rest periods matter. There's far more to that. Pick up the book. It'll explain that to you, or sign up for the insiders list for the strength training for cyclist certification, where I go really deep on that. Or you can take the strength training for cycling success or strength training for triathlon success courses that I have over at Training Peaks. Any of those will help you dive deeper into that side of things, but there's lots of resources out there for you to be able to do so. So let's turn over to the other side of the equation, which is the energy side of the equation. Now, there's a number of different factors. I have a 20-something YouTube video up on this, but when it comes to actually producing power, and this is where a lot of us miss, the second biggest miss, is that we don't truly understand what compiles our power. What is it that produces that power on the bike? Well, we've already talked about the muscles. and strength training. That's the neuromuscular system. We all know that we need the cardiovascular system, right? Certainly we need that. We are an aerobic sport, so we would be very, very poorly thought to not bring that into the equation. And then when you think about our on-bike and we're training the energy systems, that's what VO2 max and steady state, so the metabolic system. But the one that we tend to neglect is the hormonal system. And this is where quality sleep, what you're eating, how you're managing stress, both mental and physical, all come into play to affect the internal environment, and something that a lot of people find very, very difficult to do. They see psychology as a foo-foo, she-she, soft science, and that really hurts over the course of your career because there's a lot of performance gains that come in with that. And I've had a number of conversations the last couple of weeks with previous beta members from the Big Gear Blueprint, as well as athletes that I'm currently coaching, that have found the psychology side of things in our conversations, our coaching calls, extremely beneficial and breakthrough-ish, if you will, or actually they are breakthroughs. And that's one of the reasons why we've had Dr. Lisa Lewis on this show so many times. I think she's up there at the top episodes, either three or four at this point, and we're not even up to episode 100 quite yet. We still have 12 more after this. But that's the new frontier. I think there's a lot of exploring that we need to do here in strength training, but understanding the stress response, how to better create an internal environment that is far better off is the number two challenge. So managing stress, getting you when you need to be in high drive, you're in high drive, and when you need to dial down, getting you to be able to sleep, getting you to be able to eat high quality nutrition, or when it's appropriate to eat the junk food and not feel guilty. There is a time and a place for that. Doesn't mean you go hog wild, but there is a time and a place for it. All right, so let's review. Number one, strength training that is actually helping you increase your performance, not the weight on the bar or the reps for a specific set. Number two, stress management to help you to be able to better improve and control or manipulate the internal hormonal environment, the internal environment. And this is where that HRV episode, some people were like, oh, that came out of left field. What is that from? Because it was setting you up for this one to begin to understand. HRV gives you an insight into the internal environment. If you listen to that episode again, I think it was episode 84, I want to say, or yeah, 84, I believe. You can go back and we're talking about accuracy and precision. This is why the accuracy and precision of your HRV matters a lot if you are looking to use it for performance. If you're just using it as general fitness and you're just enjoying riding and getting in a little bit better shape and you're not doing super serious training, those ones that we mentioned, the general masses ones should work okay for you. But if you really want to dial in, if you're a numbers person or you're serious about doing the best you can to improve your health and wellness, get one that is accurate and precise. We mentioned the two that we use here in that episode. So make sure when you're done here, give us a five-star review and then head on over and listen to that episode. Now, number three is the biggest mistake is we just don't know what we don't know. And I talk about this in the update of the book, the second edition, the revision. There's actually a chart in there on the components of conditioning. And we tend to really focus in our sport on the energy production side of things. So this is the rate of energy production, or power, the total potential of energy production, or biological power, which we've talked about here before, which is the hormonal system, the metabolic system, the cardiorespiratory system, and the neuromuscular system. All of those are the four pillars of fitness that need to be addressed. And the last is the duration of energy production, or your capacity. And this is where we're going to pivot in a moment here and talk about mistake number five. But really, the components of conditioning, number four, the components of conditioning are just, it blows my mind how many people, especially coaches out there, and this isn't a knock against them, because nowadays I think coaches have it harder than ever before. And the reason for that is that there's so much information, both really, 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 really good if you know how to find it and who to follow, but also a crapload of really bad information out there, which is what most people are finding. So coaches, especially the good ones, are on this constant uphill battle. Like the slope has gone from like a 4% grade to like Rialto Street in Pittsburgh. It's at like a 32% grade, like just insane as to how much headwind we have to fight the bad information that's out there about training and that everybody can find. It's at your fingertips, but there's no gatekeeper to allow people to understand, hey, this is good information, this is bad information, this is what the masses are doing, or this is what the leading athletes and experts are doing. The other challenge we have with this, before we get into the other components, the other half of the equation, components of conditioning, is that there's a lot of practitioners out there, a lot of coaches who are claiming to be research-based. And there's it's like taking a buckshot and trying to hit a bullseye, right? You're just going to blow the whole target away. Those of you who don't like guns, I apologize, but that's the best equivalent I could come up with. You are, if you're reading research and you say that you're evidence-based, and I'm guilty of this, so I'm not saying, pointing fingers without recognizing my own shortcomings as a younger coach. I am guilty of this, and that's how I recognize it so quickly, because my mentors pointed it out, and I recognize it quickly with other coaches I talk to in our conversation. Reading a research article, just reading the conclusion or the summary, is not enough. If you really are going to consider yourself or call yourself an evidence-based practitioner, you need to understand how to read and interpret well a research article. And I am still learning. I have a very, very long way to go, but I've also come a very long way. And this ties into actually understanding how to read the research articles. Now, we actually did an episode back in the 30s. I think it was episode 37 or something like that. Episode 30. Is triathlon actually healthy? And how to really read a research article. So I actually give you the tools on how to read a research article. And it's counterintuitive. And you would think, hey, when you learn that stuff, you'd be like, well, why don't they just change how they publish the research articles? Well, there's a thought process that goes with it. And that's important to the scientific process. Or in a couple of years, maybe we'll find out it's complete bull. but that's how it's done. So you really need to understand how to read. Who did the research work for? Who did it not work for? Who were the participants? What are the shortcomings of the study? I've had a couple conversations the last couple of weeks with researchers on stuff that I'm interested in. I won't mention what it is. I don't want to say anything derogatory. It's just in our conversations, I just start asking questions. And oftentimes in these conversations, they're like, wow, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that. Or, huh, that's really interesting. That's a very different perspective than what I'm coming at it from. Let's talk about that. So this is what the best researchers are doing. They're having conversations, they're getting perspectives. But there's also, at the end of the day, they need to do the research. They need to put the work in. And they need to just start. If we just keep bouncing back and forth, we'll never learn anything. Does this sound like a rabbit hole? No. I mean, it sounds like one, but it's not. And here's why. If you are looking to improve your one-minute performance or your all-out performance, a lot of people are using evidence-based practices now. And they're saying, well, there was a research study that was just published X number of months ago in X journal, and this is what they found. And they never consider, well, is that a peer-reviewed journal? Was it peer-reviewed article? Or was it just pay for print? I don't know. It was in a journal. It doesn't matter. Actually, it matters a lot. Who were the authors? I don't know. Well, have they looked at this before? No. Okay. That's not a problem, but let's see what other relevant research has been done in the area. And then you start looking at things. So before you can pull a research article and quote it and throw it out there and say, this is how we're training, because you really need to understand how do we know this to be true? And then how would this apply and whom would it apply for? Because it usually won't apply all the time. Now let's get back to number four, which is the components of conditioning. So we talked about how as cyclists and triathletes, we really focus on the energy production side of things, rate of energy, the power, the capacity, and the biological power, although we're often missing the neuromuscular side of things. But there's a second half to this equation, and that is how we utilize or use the energy. And again, there's a graph in the revised second edition of my book. And this side is, I find this side of the equation very difficult to get athletes to really focus on. because we want to see power numbers. We want to see things go up. I need to see progress. I've been doing this workout for 3 weeks every Tuesday. Why aren't my numbers getting better? I need to see more. Well, there's lots of different ways that we can progress that don't have to do with numbers going up. The smoothness of the power output. So there is no longer a drop at 37 seconds of your 45 second efforts, and then a spike back up. The consistency of the cadence. The recovery of your heart rate back to a resting working heart rate. So usually, 120 to 135 is about there. Or if you're really fit, maybe 100 to 120. How quickly you can get into power, how well you can repeat the power, so the average power. These are all ways that we can progress without the numbers changing a watt. But I need to see my numbers go up, coach. I'm paying you to have my numbers go up, not be the same. Well, when it comes to the all-out energy systems, the repeatability is actually going to be one of the top two considering factors or determining factors to determine who is going to actually make that break and make it stick. Usually if you got one really good effort and done, you're going to be off the back or you're going to be racing with the pack. Now let's not get too far down that rabbit hole because that's coming a little bit later down the pike here. But number four, on the other side of the equation, components of conditioning, we have the energy utilization, which is the power regulation, your ability of the body to control the muscles, the nervous system, to be able to fire. Now along with that, part two is going to be the efficiency of energy expenditure. The efficiency. So your skill, the development of your skill and technique in how you are riding your bike. Man, if I had a dollar, just a dollar, I wouldn't say a penny because then I that wouldn't be truthful, but a dollar for every time that somebody skipped out on the skills sessions that we had for the teams that I've coached over the last 15 years, man, I would be a rich, well, I'd be able to afford a new set of wheels. I wouldn't be rich, but $2,500 pair of wheels would be in my near future. And we spoke about this in episode 59, Cycle Faster, with Sebastian Weber, where we talked about the positioning and how that plays a role. And we also talked about breathing and precursory. But if you don't know Sebastian, he is the mind behind Inside Testing, which is absolutely fantastic. It's something that we utilize here at HVT. I honestly utilize it a lot less than I thought I would, for the reason that most people, we see that their central governing control or power regulation, and the last part here, the neuromuscular contractility, or their mechanical strength, their ability to orchestrate proximal stiffness to get distal motion is very poor. So I actually don't quite have as many athletes use the Inside Testing as much as I thought I was going to, or even half as much when I first got into the system. And that's because these other two sides of things are extremely rewarding. But they take time and a commitment to the process to actually see the results. And for some people, it's as quick as 2 or 3 weeks. Other people, it's a little bit longer than that. But the ability to regulate the power that you're putting out through a smoothness of your cadence and through your riding position. And again, listen to episode 59 with Sebastian. Fantastic interview. And we really got into some stuff there. We had to stop short because we both had a hard stop. But he'll be back on the show, God willing, here in the coming episode so we can dive down that. But the skill and technique of riding your bike is lost on many. I think that there's those experienced coaches out there who have been doing this for some time and have developed riders and triathletes, not just on numbers, but on skills, and are known to have those riders and triathletes who are well-hearsed in their skill toolbox. Not that they have a million tools, but they have like a starter Swiss Army knife, right? So it's got a long knife, a short knife, a nail file, a toothpick, a corkscrew, and an awl, and whatever, the tweezers on the other side, right? So you've got the main things that you need, and you just got to pull out of the little 1980s MacGyver to be able to utilize these things to get the best. But these coaches coach it well. Now, for the swimming coaches for triathletes, that's what they do. The best coaches are able to teach the skill and technique extremely well to suit that swimmer or that triathlete. They know what works for the athletes that they coach, and they are not afraid to refer a swimmer who won't be able to get the most out of their coaching to another coach who will. Now, this goes the same for cycling. Anybody who knows me knows that I do not teach mountain biking skills. Yes, I've worked with a national champion downhill mountain biker. That was my part of the game. It was strength training and conditioning. That's what I did with her, strength and conditioning. Her skills work was all with her skills coach, her downhill mountain bike coach, because I don't know that much about that sport. I watched a bunch of films outside the tape. Outside the tape was a fantastic insight for me and really opened my eyes. And watching the racing to really understand the demands and then to reverse engineer it. But understanding that skill and technique and regulation of power being smooth and steady and having that neuromuscular contractility are absolutely integral if you want to have better conditioning. And these are neglected time after time after time. Skill session, again, I remember running skill session where one person showed up and everybody else had an excuse. Oh, well, this Sunday I had to help my friend move. Whereas when we're doing the long rides or the hard intervals, everybody's there, even the people that the coaches have said, hey, look, you should probably stay home for this one or you should ride with the other team because it's going to be a little bit much for you. Everybody likes to suffer as an endurance athlete, but nobody wants to put in the work to actually get better. And that's why you're listening here, right? You are a savvy cyclist and triathlete, and you want to be stronger. So that's what we're looking for out of this. All of the conditioning in the world isn't going to help you at all if you waste it with crappy technique. And if you're racing, you have very poor race strategy. So for me, an insight for you, a book that I'm currently working through is Cossin's. I think it's Peter Cossin's Full Gas. Fantastic book on the insight as to what it takes to actually win a bike race. I strongly recommend any tacticians out there, any up-and-coming director sportifs, maybe not director sportifs, but coaches who want to do the tactical side of things. Tap into previous guest Colin Sandberg. He was here just a couple of weeks ago. Or pick up the book Full Gas or Racing Tactics by Thomas Preen. I mean, that really is the set foundation. All tactics that go in a road cycling race, at least, branch out of what Thomas covers in his book. So that's mistake number four, is that you are not actually working on energy utilization and energy production. So you're just focusing on one side of the equation. That's so common in our sports and is a big mistake. And some of the best triathletes will tell you that. They're not the fastest swimmer, but they work to become the most efficient for themselves, whether it's a 2-beat, a 4-beat, an 8-beat kick, more upper pull, more, you know, it's not total immersion or American Red Cross style. It's finding the style that works for you, that connects with you, and allows you to grow and progress.
Want to learn more? Check out humanvortextraining.com for more on this topic from Coach Brody and today's guest.
All right, we've covered quite a bit here. We've talked about a number of things, strength training, the internal environment. Actually, that was number three. Number two was addressing the four pillars of athletic development. And then we just spoke about the components of conditioning. This is a lot of stuff. So we've really covered a lot. We spent a lot of time on the components of conditioning, but you see how those first three lead up to this one, right? So we're talking about skill and technique, which is based off of strength training and developing the four pillars. We talked about the hormonal and the internal environment of the hormonal system. So having the components of strength training when you do it right and you're not blowing yourself out by going metabolic in the gym and actually getting neuromuscular work, that helps you actually better balance the internal environment, the hormonal environment of the body. This is why strength training needs to be year-round, not just in base, and not where you drop your riding and put on 4 kilos of muscle because you weren't riding enough. And we need to have all four of the energy systems working together. And then you need to make sure that you're working to de-stress, managing your stress, work stress, life stress, whatever it may be, training stress. And then you need to understand the components of conditioning. So all of these build together. And this is where we get into what a lot of you would say, oh, this is what I was expecting. This is what I was waiting for on the podcast. Why did he go so long before this? I went so long before this because those things that you're not even thinking about, the strength training, proximal stiffness for distal motion, the skills, getting the internal environment to be better, having the four pillars of athletic development, all four developed and working better together, and then looking at both sides of the equation when it comes to energy production. These are the things that you need to hear that nobody's telling you. So that's why it's taken us so long to get to performing a fatigue profile or a power profile. Now, this is something Hunter Allen and I spoke about. We didn't get a chance to go as deep. I think that's kind of a recurring theme here is most of the interviews that we finish, we're like, man, I really wish I would have booked out another, you know, half hour to go through this because there's more stuff I want to get into. And that's on the guest part, not my part. Although I always want to go deeper. 83 with Hunter Allen, we talked about this and how power is a guide in your training. It should not be the determining factor. But if you go and you look at training and racing with a power meter, which, by the way, they are now, I think, in their fourth or fifth edition at this point. The book is now over 20 years old. I think the first edition printed was 1999 or 2000. But if you go back and you look at chapter four. So this is really early in the book. So for those of you who don't know, training and racing with a power meter is the first, it's kind of the Bible, if you will. But essentially, this book goes through, you know, why train with a power meter. Chapter one, power number two, power tools. Chapter three, power-based training. Where to begin? Chapter four, determining your strengths and weaknesses. Guess what? Let me actually look through the book here and see, because I think that there is the FTP test, functional threshold. Yep, that's page 47. And then if you just turn the page and we get into chapter four, so that's chapter three. Chapter four gives you the power profile chart. And then 57. So 10 pages later, there's this really cool thing called the power profile. Yet so few athletes and coaches use this. I've heard the FTP is the backbone of my coaching. The FTP is the backbone of my training. Well, that's great, but that's like taking an estimation. So that's like saying, well, if Pittsburgh is about halfway between New York and, I don't know, Detroit, I know that's not quite right, then that means that Atlanta is halfway between Sarasota and Cleveland. If you look at a map, that's not even close. But that's essentially what you're doing with your FTP. You're like, well, in my mind, that's kind of how I remember it, but that's not how it works. You actually need to test the exact energy systems to figure out what you actually need. So the power profile has been the backbone of my coaching philosophy, if you will, because I do use that terminology. That's why I said it. And has been for a number of years. I've done the FTP thing. I did it for about 3 years. And as an exercise physiologist, it just drove me crazy because I'm like, man, the numbers for the VO2 or the all-out are not matching this model. WTF, mate. And then I went back and reread the book. I'm like, oh, page 57. Holy crap, it's right here. So that's the next step that you'd want to go through is the power profile. It's actually a lot of fun to do. It's not as much of a suffer fest. I like to tack on at the end of it. You know, you go through and you do, they have here 45-minute easy riding. Keep in mind that is generally for a rider who's been riding 10 plus hours a week. So I'll usually do, you know, 10 or 15 minute warm up, the fast pedaling or spin ups. They do a short functional threshold power or aerobic capacity effort of 5 minutes. Then they do an all out effort, some easy riding, out of the saddle all out effort from 20 miles an hour, if they can handle that. So you've got to have the knowledge and the skills to say, hey, they can barely hold 20 on their own. Let's start at 15 because that's fast ish for them. With specific directives for the last 45 seconds. You get the idea, right? And 2x15-second efforts at the end with 2 minutes rest in between. This gives you a much better idea as to what you can actually handle on the bike and what your energy systems can do. Now, a lot of people like to say, well, you know, when you look at the power profile, I'm a time trialist, or I'm a criterium rider, or I'm an all-arounder. Well, did you actually train the different energy systems, or is that just your natural starting point? Because I know lots of basketball players and American football players who have gotten onto the bike and their power profile at the beginning are sprinters. And that's because they're coming from a sport where primarily it's 5 to 8 seconds B bursts. And then, you know, you're doing, if you're running for a minute in a basketball game full, like that's a crazy game. There's crazy turnovers, and no coach wants to play that. So it's really burst, set, if you have a shot clock, 18 to 24 seconds, and then going to the other way. And it's not always a sprint. So that makes sense, right? That's what they were programmed for. That's what they've been training for. But when you actually get into training the energy systems and testing the energy systems and talking to the person, and again, I go through this in the Strength Training for Cyclists certification course, where we do a verbal assessment, not just for strength, but also for on bike. And you learn about what that person does in their training. So it's a skill that you need to develop in order to be able to truly assess your athletes. So the power profile test gives you a much better idea as to where they are right now. But here's the next thing that I've rarely heard any other coach or athlete do. Now, let me first preface this by saying that I do these about once every 9 to 15 months with most but not all of my cyclists, for the reason that as we're going through their training, for many of them, I don't need at this point to go through the formalized testing protocol. I understand through their training, analyzing their power profiles, I can see where the fatigue is. However, there are places and times to actually do the formalized testing, and that is page 62, and dog-eared, highlighted, testing protocols for fatigue profile for levels 6 and 7, anaerobic capacity and neuromuscular power, and VO2 max is on page 63. And this is, I think, the second edition of the book. Second edition. So it's a little bit outdated at this point. And I do need to find my newer one. I think I lent it out to an athlete a couple weeks ago. But this fatigue profiling, I find it to be really useful. And I actually kind of extended it. I know they don't really cover it in the book, but I've actually extended this back to lactate threshold as well. And they have the tables in here. They don't actually have the testing protocol from what I recall. But he has level 4 lactate threshold. Your 20-minute power should be 100%. If your 60-minute power is below average, you're going to have a drop of 7 to 11. And then 90 minutes. I don't go 60, 90 minutes. That's not the level the athletes I have. But if you actually want to determine what your capabilities are for your all-outs, you've got to have a really good idea as to what your aerobic energy system can handle. So if you're doing functional threshold test of 12 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes, do that test, then do 8-minute or a 6-minute. I know the 6-minute is technically VO2 max, but you'd be amazed as to how many people the VO2 max system kind of just shuts down after about 4.5, 5 minutes. They just don't like suffering that much. And 8 minutes as well is technically VO2 max. But for most people, they're going to see that as functional threshold. Again, exercise physiologists listening, I know that's not technically how it works, but this is where we need to straddle what we know as physiologists and what's actually happening for the individuals out in the real world. So you can develop your own testing protocol, very similar to what they do here in the book on page 62. Pretty straightforward, but that's the second part to, or rather, that's the fifth part and beginning of the second half of why you're not getting what you need to out of your all-outs. You're not actually looking at the fatigue profile and training the weaker parts of that energy system. And I cannot tell you how many riders, specifically cyclists, who have come to me saying that they're losing their sprint, their previous coaches or riding buddies weren't training well for them. And when we do the fatigue profile, they just look at the profile. They're like, yeah, I know that, you know, the 250 meter and 300 to 350 meter sprint are going to suck. Well, why is that? I don't do those. So I don't like them. Interesting. And you're saying that you're not competitive at the next level. You went cat four to cat three, and you're no longer competitive in the sprint, and you used to win the last 150 meters. We should probably train that energy system, even though you don't like it. And that ties back to the Reinach scale and everything else. This is really important. That fatigue profile is going to help you identify exactly where in the energy system you should be training. And it also ties into your race style. And this is where being savvy as to how to read a power file and how to go through is going to be extremely beneficial for you and help you really dial back into what your needs actually are, as opposed to going, oh, well, this book recommends that I do this many sets and repetitions at this second and this time. I've taken, you know, numerous workouts from other coaches or other athletes and personalized them because, that, you know, nothing is new under the sun, right? But you've got to tailor it to that individual. And this is where the last two bits, pieces 6 and 7, are really important for you getting more out of your all-out intervals. Number 6, so we just talked about fatigue profile. That was number 5. And actually getting to see what's within your energy systems. Number 6 is when to stop your workout. When to stop your workout. Now, many of you have probably picked up, paused the podcast, and picked up your own copy of Training Racing with the Power Meter or following along at home. But guess what? The first indication for me at this point in my career, maybe it'll come back to power at some point, the first indication for me is that heart rate not dropping back down to a working resting heart rate. So 120 to 130 for most of the athletes. I have a couple who are in their 60s, late 50s, who are lower. They're in their 107, 105 is theirs. But I look at how long does it take them to recover back to working resting heart rate. And we have to match that in your workouts to appropriate power levels. And this is where a lot of you are sabotaging your own efforts. And this is what the mainstream media and lots of articles will tell you, is that you're pedaling too hard in between your intervals. Yes, you are. But as you can hear in today's episode, that is number 6 on our list, because there's a plethora of other things that need to be taken into consideration before that. And it really does come down to that. Now, if you want to say, well, Brody, this is much more practical, I can take this and apply it right now by pedaling easier in between, sure. But then you're essentially, I don't know if any of you have been to Pittsburgh or the Northeast during the winter, or the spring rather, when it's going through that freeze-thaw cycle, but it's like filling a pothole with the loose gravel, with the loose asphalt. It fixes it for about 2 days, and then you've got way bigger one and way more cracks in the road and many more potholes following after that. So you've essentially fixed it, but you're creating more issues. And that's why this is way later. Yeah, we could do this simple fix, but that's not being savvy. That's just being, give me the quick answer. Let's put some work into it. Let's work on the strength training. Let's work on your internal environment. Let's get all four pillars going. Let's get you to be able to better understand what exactly you need out of your intervals. Let's talk about the different sides of the equation. Get you to actually utilize the energy better and use the energy better. And then let's talk about the fatigue profile, so you know exactly what part of the energy system you're training. Because maybe you do the fatigue profile and you find out, holy cow, you know what? My 10 second is really good. But the drop off between my 10 and my 20 second is really big. Now you know, we've just made you more savvy, because now you know, man, I can't, the 20 second efforts are not my strong point. So I'd rather stay more in VO2 max, a little bit longer, find the right wheel and work on my riding skill, and then just get a 12 second effort. So now that Peter Cosson's book of Full Gas or Racing Tactics for Road Cycling by Thomas Preen is way more applicable to you, because you're truly racing to your strengths. It's not the strongest man wins a race. It's the most savvy man wins. They know how many matches they have. They know what energy systems they can use, what's strong, what's weak. That's what we're looking at here, right? This is why you're all out suck. You're looking for the simple solution, bro. You're just like, oh, I just need to pedal softer in between and get my power back down. No, there's so many other things before that. So the heart rate recovery, I usually tell people, you know, if we're looking at 1 minute efforts, if it takes you longer than 3.5 minutes to get your heart rate down to your working recovery, you're done. Even if it's effort number 3, like technically effort number 3 is the most repeatable. But if we see you can't get your heart rate down and you are pedaling appropriately, that means your breathing patterns are off, your posture is off, your internal environment is screwed up because your hormones, you're stressed, something's going on, you're not sleeping well, you're not hydrated, something is going on and we need to cut the workout. And usually in that sense, or that case, I have a sense of what that might be, and then they have a backup plan. And other times it comes out of left field. And they disclose to me, you know, during the call, like, hey, I saw you just cut your ride short. You know, I just uploaded. I see 36 and a half minutes and you had 3 efforts. What's going on? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you told me that whole heart rate thing. And you know, I did the power thing in between. But I forgot to tell you that I had this really big project at work and it's really been stressing me out. And I haven't been sleeping that well for the last month. Okay, now we need to change the training plan. Now we need to change the strength training, because there's other stresses going on. So we've got to take that in and balance. And this takes us all the way back to number 2, which is the different, the four pillars of athletic development. If that hormonal status is screwed up, we've got to balance everything else and change that balance of their neuromuscular system, the cardiorespiratory system, the metabolic system to match or to support the hormonal system so that those pillars are getting back into alignment with one another. They don't have to be perfect. You're going to have a natural skew, but it is absolutely paramount. So that's number six. Heart rate recovery, down to a working recovery heart rate. But this, again, comes so later. And then number seven, the last one for today, is when do they stop the intervals based off of average drop in power? And this is where page 74, second edition. Yes, I know that the newest edition was loaned out. I see it now. I loaned it out about 4 weeks ago, so I need to get that sucker back. Or just order a couple more copies from Hunter. When to stop the intervals by power is last for me. And if you've listened to this podcast, perhaps you've rewound a couple times, you'll understand why that drop off in power comes far later. There are times and places that we need to put more stress on each of these different parts. But that tends to come way later down the road for me and the athletes that I coach at this point in my career. A lot of it has to do with experience. A lot of it has to do with my own philosophy. But I've found to this point, through my failures and through my successes, more so my failures, that what we've talked about on this podcast, the first four tend to take care of a lot of the problems that we have and can really tidy things up very quickly. Now, the key to actually developing that long-term power in those energy systems is to focus on those and not just get them tidied up, but solidify and truly make them into a foundation for your performance that will allow you to actually see long-term benefits. We're not looking for a quick turnaround. Unless, of course, you know, you're racing. We had COVID last year. We had a lot of stuff going on. Maybe you have this one race to qualify for whatever it may be. And we heard last week, you know, Amber Neben has been essentially holding on or trying to balance her fitness for a year now. She qualified for 2020, now it's 2021, and she's done a hell of a job to get there. And of course, she can use your support to physically get there and compete. But that also affects the internal environment, her internal hormonal environment. Once we all pitch in and support her to get her to the Olympics, that changes the internal environment. And this is where happy, well-balanced people get to their body fat percentages, get their body fat percentages down, are able to be more resilient in their training, are happier in their day-to-day lives, are less stressed overall, or better able to deal with stress. They practice gratitude more frequently. And that all ties into many of the other topics we've covered here on the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete podcast. So there's a ton. I know a lot of you are like, man, this was such a waste of time. He's talking about soft stuff. Where are the numbers? I want the numbers. Why was this at the end? Because those things are already at the forefront, but people are skipping the important foundational things instead of spending the time on them. So if you found today's episode to be useful and to better understand how to improve your all-outs and your overall fitness, go ahead and give us a review. Make sure to share us with 3 to 5 people who need to hear this episode. And even if they're possibly not open to it yet, share it with them. We've got to get this information out there because a lot of people don't know what they don't know. So if you found this useful, go ahead and give us a review. Share this podcast with 3 to 5 other people, more if you like. And of course, as mentioned, you have a number of other podcasts to listen to as homework. Episode 83 with Sebastian, episode 53 rather. Was it 53 or 83? I can't remember. I think it was 83 with Sebastian. Or no, maybe it was 83 with, 83 was with Hunter. 50-something was, or 59, I think, was with Sebastian. Amber was last week. Man, there's so much stuff going on. I can't even remember all the numbers. But you've got lots of podcast episodes to go back and listen to. And make sure you're checking out the Human Vortex Training blog posts. They go up weekly. And the HV Training YouTube channel. We've got lots of great stuff there. There's a 20-minute video, as mentioned before, about the four pillars of athletic progression that will really help you get a little bit of a deeper dive into what we talked about here today. So until next time, remember, train smarter, not harder, because it is all about you.
That's it for this episode of the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast with world-leading strength coach for cyclists and triathletes, Menachem Brody. don't miss an episode. Hit that subscribe button and give us a review. For more exclusive content, visit humanvortextraining.com or get the latest expert videos from Coach Brody on the HVT YouTube channel at HV Training. Until next time, remember to train smarter, not harder, because it is all about you.